Shut up and sit down.
Yes, might have gotten away with it too. If it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dog.
Riding my bike,
You blasted kids, why didn't you mind your own business?
Riding my bike.
Blasted meddling kids.
Everything's nice.
And it would have been mine if it hadn't been for those meddling kids.
You are listening to the Dialed Podcast with Matt Lee Grand, Evan Price, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. Obstacles don't have to stop you. If you run into a wall, don't turn around and give up. Figure out how to climb it, go through it, or work around it.
We could ride together all day long.
And I would have made millions if it hadn't been for you meddling kids.
We could put our bikes down, but that
was. And I'd have done it too, if you kids hadn't come along.
Everything's nice when I'm riding my bike. Everything's fine when I'm riding my bike.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike? For bicycling is a healthy, active sport, enjoyed by almost everyone. Not only does it provide vigorous outdoor exercise, it's a nice, fast way of getting from one place to another.
Hi, welcome back to the Dial Podcast. I am Jake Pondrick, and I'm here with Lance Friggin. Not to be
Freaking?
Confused with any other F word.
Hey, frig you. Frig you. It's Lance Friggin Hepler.
Hepler.
This podcast is off to a freaking bad start.
It's a bad start.
F-L-A.
Hey, Lance.
Yes.
Let's always buy the plants you found. Mustache men solid.
What?
Is it a mustache song?
You had this face.
Wind in his face. Riding all
is this...
day at his own pace.
This is a Lance.
This is a... Listen.
Lady swoon as he ride, scruffy beard in the air. Roadie and gravel roll, a rare fusion, tires humming river. A thrilling illusion, riding with no pants. Lance takes to the wheezing and bashing his bike. Green, green, with a good beat, he conquers every street. Lance freaking Hepler, sandbag king.
Sandbag something.
Sandbag King.
Okay,
so
there you go.
This goes back. Freaking Hepler, the Sandbag King.
This goes back to our discussion last week, we weren't even recording.
No, we were not.
That discussion. But it was the discussion of like new AI tools for building songs. And it's brilliant.
Somebody did a little research on the interwebs.
Jake's got that sparkle in his eye. Like he's got one for each of us.
I looked at this too, because you can basically like start to give it some
you
things
can prompt
you want
it.
Added into the song or whatever.
You can create whatever the hell you want, and you can go on and tweak the lyrics. I wrote that song for you. I'll send you the lyrics.
Thank you. Please send me the lyrics.
It's really good.
That's hilarious. Right. It made me sweat. I'm sweating.
There you go.
You're blushing.
All right. Two Lances right, Sir Ian Gibson.
What you got for me?
Are you going to introduce yourself?
What do you got for me?
Where's the Gibbo?
I thought we were all getting songs here.
Where's the Gibbo bit?
Hey, hello.
Hi, Gibbo here.
Gibbo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I love that it's like hair rock. Bro, I like this.
This is awesome.
Like, I would just listen to this.
Yeah.
Hello, loving it.
I think we'll let that one fade out. That'll be available on Spotify later on this afternoon if you would like to stream that. All right, and finally, last but not least, Mr. Matt LeGrand.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet? I hope I don't have a song.
Oh, of course not. Feeling the beat, I'm the
mayor of a commerce lake. Singer-songwriter style.
Mine is just the real Matt LeGrand. Swimming like a fish, I leave my competition in the dust, and I got it on camera. I got it on camera.
There it is. Southern charm, running fast and free. I'm a freaking state champion. Matt LeGrand, you too, with style. Make your wings on the internet, open the extra mile.
Ladies and gentlemen on the internet, I'm out. I got goggles to review. I got goggles to review.
How you guys doing today?
Wait, okay. Where's yours, Jake?
I don't have one.
No, yes. Oh. Come on. Bring yours up.
He's an asshole, sir. What's his name?
That is his name, sir.
Jake Von Turing, the JVD. He used to ride bikes, but now he's free.
Lance just freestyles.
I freestyled.
You're like Eminem.
Yeah, that's
right.
It's like
sitting it's like sitting across from Eminem.
I'll tell you what. If you tune in next week for the Next Out podcast, there will be a song. I'll make that happen. So you got to come back and listen, right?
Okay.
Cool. All right. Well, all the shenanigans out of the way. I hope you guys like your new little jingle there.
It's all downhill.
It's not. We've peaked. Yeah.
Did we just jump the shark, though?
I feel like we somehow have to keep our intro shorter. The songs are awesome, but we need to like just come in with like a quick clip and get back to business.
That can happen. So, all right. Cool. How about some backpedaling, boys? Who wants to go first? Matt LeGrand?
Sure.
Where do you got swim goggles to review?
Swim goggles to review. I just got out of the pool, so there's that. And I ran the rest of the week, and I biked once with David Goodman.
Cool.
It was glorious.
It was pretty good weather week.
Yeah, it was great weather. I wish I actually took, like, the one day I went out to bike, it was... It was like the Saturday that was rainy or something like that.
Oh.
Do you remember that it was like, it like rained like at 5 o'clock in the evening and I was busy all morning. And then I finally got out there and I was like, yeah, sorry, David, sorry for making you wait all day until it starts raining. And then now we're going to go ride. So, but it was glorious. Glorious week.
Sweet.
Glorious.
Cool. Gibbo.
Hey.
What up?
You raced.
I did. I raced my bike. I did the Paper Town Classic held by our friends Cowlitz Racing up there in Longview, Washington.
Sweet.
Beautiful day. Last Sunday, flat course, very windy.
How do Crosswinds. You like that compared to the old Dirty Circles? Which one's better?
I think the Dirty Circles was better. I mean, this is a good course, but it's very narrow on the backside, so there's not a lot of room.
The Paper Town?
Yes. Yeah. Roads are quite narrow, I guess. A couple of meters narrower. The first couple of laps, you really had to concentrate because we were all bunched up and riding elbow to elbow. Like 25 miles an hour.
So. From what I hear, though, the race was pretty clean. There was no like mishaps or anything like that, right?
In our race, yeah, it was very clean.
Yeah, I think that was the consensus for all races, so that's good considering the circumstances.
I think they had a successful event. Fair play to them. It was a good day. They had a good turnout. It's probably, I think he said there was 215 races, which is
good for them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
But it was proper racing. We averaged nearly 25 miles an hour for 2.5 hours. My normalized power was like 295, 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And
holy cow, Ian.
Yeah, I mean, it was
for 2.5 hours.
TSS for that? Just
280 something, I think.
Yeah.
Wait, how long was the race?
Maybe I would need to calibrate my.
2.5 hours? Is that what you said?
It was 2 hours, 15, I think.
How many miles were you guys? 54 miles. 54 miles?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. All right. Nine laps. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, lap two, predictably, I watched Paul Bussier. He's a national champion in his age category. Mm-hmm. Nice guy. He drifted towards the front and, sure enough, put in an attack. A couple of guys followed him. And I saw Greg coming past me to join the break, determined at high speed. Greg Steele.
Uh-huh. You couldn't jump on his wheel?
I could have jumped on his wheel, but I just made the decision that if I get up there and I could have followed Greg, I couldn't have hung with those guys. They were just, they're just a level above
me. How early
me.
Was it? How much
to it was go? Like a, it was like on lap three, I think.
Yeah, Rob Tornai jumped in too, correct?
Rob Tornai jumped in. Yep. I can't remember who else. Anyway, I would have been spat off the back of that group. I'm pretty
sure. You think
sure.
so? I mean, you could have, I don't know, had that little cheeky move of just kind of sitting in and not doing the work.
Yeah, you say that, but
you weren't in their age.
I know that they're putting the watts down, but yeah.
What made that race difficult was the crosswinds. Mm. And instead of like forming echelons like you see in the pro peloton,
guttering you on the center line?
Right on the center line, strung out on the center line. Yeah, so everybody's there was nowhere to hide. I mean, yeah. And anyway, we put up a chase. At least, Joe Tiso, he was not going to let that go. Even when they had like over 2 minutes on us, we were still in full-on chase mode. So it was just relentless, but fun, I guess, in a type two kind of way. Oh. Of course, the after the break crossed the line, I think we were 3 minutes after that, but it came down to a field sprint, which I kind of buggered up. But
yeah. How'd you bugger it up? Wrong spot?
Yeah, I was in the right spot, and I watched I had my two old geezer rivals in front of me. Mark Litterall from up in Seattle, who's deceptively strong for his age. Mm-hmm. And Chris Brown from CC Racing, super guy. Mm-hmm. Him and I usually always duke it out, PIR. And anyway, I was on his wheel. Those two went, and there was just somebody drifted across my lane right at that point. So I had to get past them, and by that time it was too late. And I was just buggered. I mean, my legs were fried at that point. I couldn't even put down 1,000 watts at that point.
I couldn't even put down 1,000 watts. I've never seen four digits on my power meter. I rarely see three digits. Okay.
Yeah. Well.
Congratulations, Matt.
I'm used. I can do.
Look at that triple digits there.
Anyway, yeah, it was humbling, but.
Sweet.
It was a good day. And then anyway,
that's awesome.
So that was Sunday. Monday, I rode out with Lance. What's his name?
Freaking
Hepler. Yeah.
I was wondering if you rode together because I saw something that Lance posted. Or did you guys go like Multnomah Falls area?
No, that was yesterday. That was yesterday.
Okay. Monday, we went out to Barton Park, which coincidentally I'm holding a road race at in a couple of weeks. Anyway. We shot some video. We checked out the course. We looked at where we were going to put our flaggers and
doing some course recon. Yeah,
where we were going to stage the race and so on. So that was good. Good times.
We shot some preview video so people can see what the big climb is like and whatnot. Yeah. So
anyway, it was a good week. That's all I got to say about that.
Cool. Yep.
It's out there. Yeah, I raced my bike as well this week. I did a freaking time trial, and. I hated every minute.
It's your new thing.
It's not my new thing.
The only thing is you're thinking like, okay, I love time trialing, but can we get some like swimming before, some running afterwards?
Please no.
It's the only thing that would make this better. It's like a little bit of a little splash and dash.
I went down to Eugene just to do one of the time trials cool. so I could get on the time trial list for the year. There weren't a whole lot of people there. These are pretty poorly attended events. I don't know why they're poorly attended. It's kind of nice country roads. It was 15 and a half mile course with 1,000 feet of climbing. So you do this one climb twice and it's kind of a loop. I borrowed everything. I borrowed aero bars that I put on my road bike. I borrowed deep dish front wheels from Josh Monda. I borrowed a disc wheel that I couldn't get to work on my bike because the cassette wouldn't work. I borrowed Matt's skin suit And
it was dirty when I gave it to him. And it, guess what?
It's still dirty.
So much dirtier now.
I borrowed Matt's skin suit. I borrowed Matt's
time trial helmet. Did you use the visor on the TT helmet?
Yep.
It's fast. Yep. It's a good helmet.
I felt like a complete poser out there.
You're supposed to.
Time traveling with people.
If you don't get out there and you're like, I'm either part of a Tron movie or a complete poser.
Yes.
Like, that's how you should feel when you start a TT.
So anyway, the weather was perfect. It was beautiful. There was only 6 people in the 50 to 59 age group. But I ended up winning it because I don't know. I don't know how I won it.
You got the watts and you got, you know.
It freaking hurt.
Oh, yeah.
I was trying to break 40 minutes. I went 41 even. It was not that easy.
Yeah.
There were 2 pro athletes who showed up who were prepping for the Tour of the Gila, which is happening right now in New Mexico. And so there were 2 pro athletes, Sean Hollenbach and Max Ritzau, both showed up. And they beat me by 8 full minutes. 8 minutes. A 15-mile race. They beat that's like 3 miles. They beat me by 3 miles. That was
in 15 miles.
In 15 miles, they beat me by 8 minutes.
Damn kids.
It was humbling. It was very humbling.
Anyway, mission accomplished, right?
Mission accomplished.
Bar points in the back.
You got all the points you can get for
I didn't even have to. I just wanted to go finish it, but you know, then you show up on race day and you're
gonna
like,
race.
I can.
So yeah, what I was telling you, what you really need to do is go to Baker City and get crit points, TT points, road race points, all in one weekend.
Do you need it?
That's the way to do it. I don't know. We'll have to see. It depends on who starts gunning for me because I'm not being shy about trying to win the Masters Bar. And there's some guys that could easily.
Nor should you. I don't
there's
think.
There's guys
think
who good. Could easily.
It's kind of nice to talk.
Crush me in this, including our own Ian Gibson, who's sitting right here at the table.
Probably. I don't think so. But everybody should do Baker City Cycling Classic one time, and definitely you should.
I have not done it yet.
It's an experience.
I've gone out and watched you guys. I watched That's you guys right. 1 year, but I didn't compete actually. Anyway, after the time trial, I did like a 2.5-hour ride out there in the Eugene area through these gorgeous country roads with no traffic on them. Some road called Wolf Creek and Suisla, like forest. It was fantastic. But after doing a full gas 40-minute time trial and riding 2.5 hours, I was knackered. I was pretty worn out, more worn out than I thought. Like, we had a perfect weather day here, and I completely laid on the couch all day long, like exhausted. So, but that happens. But yesterday I did Chris Hanel, Dr. Hanel. He texted me and said, hey, we're riding Lawn tomorrow. You need it for Unbound. And I said, okay. And so we rode like 5 hours together yesterday, which was lovely. We rode out to Multnomah Falls and back, which was nice. But that's it. I'm still riding my bike. That's it. Enough.
Nice.
Jake.
What?
What?
Nothing.
Damn it.
Well, you lifted.
Yeah, I did. I went to the gym a few times, and there's nothing to report. Guys, just sitting around. You know, I did go to the doctor last week, and I think we talked about that since, and I've kind of got, like, we've got a plan going forward. When I left my appointment, he was very to the point. He's like, all right, I'm going to put in the the instructions so we can get you scheduled for this procedure that you're going to have had on your hip, and it's happening right now. I'm like, all right, cool. And it's been a week, and I still haven't heard from anybody. So here we are again. Got to go chase some fools down and see if I can advocate for myself to get this stuff taken care of. But anyway, that's about it. I don't really have too much. My daughter, she committed to Penn State. So.
She did.
Yeah, she's going to go to Penn State.
She made her decision.
She finally made her decision. She's going to Penn State. I think we are flying out there to drop her off at school on August 29th or 24th or somewhere around there.
Wow.
So, and then, she actually turned 18 over the weekend, went to prom over the weekend.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. Not that this is cycling. She got ready here for prom, and there was like 13-ish girls getting ready here, so it was like a big, like,
intense
melee. Oh my gosh.
You could have, yeah, kind of just, that sounds wild.
Yeah, I just kind of went, did other things, so yeah. Got out of the way. But I did have to, like,
did Lily come over from, because I know she's in that same group.
Yeah. So, but I was the one that was tasked with getting the house ready and cleaned and yard work done and all the things set up. And
then, a lot of pictures of all these?
I did when they went to another location to do photos, and I took a bunch of pictures there, so yeah, good times.
That's awesome.
Prom update 2024.
Prom update.
Right on. Hey, boys, how about a little bit of this guy?
Champ here.
Watch out, Lance. Champ got to sit down. All right, let's do this.
Champ here. Breaking news. Our own Kylie Hanel placed third in stage one of the Tour of the Gila in New Mexico.
That is fantastic.
Fantastic.
Now, Lance, give everybody a little bit more background on this race and talk about the importance of it.
The Tour of the Gila this year, it's a road race, a stage race that is road. Yeah. There's a road stage race, and it is the only UCI stage race in the U.S. this year. Tour of the Redlands wasn't UCI. There's no other tour. Yeah. No. Baker City isn't UCI. Only the Tour of the Gila is UCI for whatever reason this year. So Kylie Hanel, she's trying to gain some more road experience. This is Chris Hanel, who I rode with yesterday. This is his daughter, his oldest daughter. She is 19, I want to say.
No, she's got to be 18 because she's graduating from high school.
I think she's 18. I don't know how old she is. Anyway, super nervous to go down there. She is racing in the 2-3 women's category. Her mom was sending me pictures of how nervous she was before the race. But she freaking took third in the first stage. So
it's going to be a big vote of confidence for her right there.
Big vote of confidence. So super proud of Kylie. Way to go, Kylie. So mom said she placed third. Amazing, especially since she was nauseous the entire time and could barely eat and drink. Strong headwind. I probably shouldn't have said that on air. But good for her. So congrats, Kylie. We're super proud of you. In other news, we had the fourth monument of the year, and it ended up being the Pogacar show again. Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
Yeah, I didn't see his break because we were all sleeping, but did he just break from the start?
He did not.
The gun goes off and he's like,
he just rode everybody off his wheel.
From what they said, like he told people before the race, like, mm-hmm. I'm going to go on this hill.
He did.
And then he did.
It was
game over.
It was like 40K to go or 38K to go.
That's the second time this year he's called his shot.
He has done that twice.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
No.
It's like almost lucky that it happens once, but to do it twice and to like man up and do it.
We don't have racers like Pogacar. Yeah. We just don't.
And Vanderpool even said, like, when he goes, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to stay with him. It's too much.
Vanderpool was a little out of position when Pogacar attacked.
But even if he were there, he would not have been able to stay with him.
So it was up this one climb with like 40K to go. I don't know how far it was. But Pogacar attacked. Everybody was watching for it because he had called his shot and said he was going to be doing it beforehand. And so they're all watching for it. He attacks. And who tried to go with him? Ben Healy. Ben Healy tried to go with him.
Carapaz.
And tried to go with him. And they like emptied themselves to try to go with him. Nope. Could not stay on his wheel. He crests over the top. It looks like the rest of the field sat up and were like,
racing for second.
I guess we're racing for second. who wants to go to the front and race for second? So he ended up getting like 10 seconds or 15 seconds over the top. And at one point, he made it a minute and a half. So
yeah, almost 2 minutes.
A lot of the favorites were held up in a crash, were they not? Before that. So they probably burned a few matches trying to.
Pidcock and Vanderpool were held up behind a crash with 100K to go. Yeah. And when the crash happened, it was right when another team had already planned to go to the front and try to string it out. And so they were on the front drilling it when the crash happened. And so Pidcock and Vanderpool were able to get back, but man, they had to burn some matches to get back on. And so, you know, you're softened up at that point and just can't quite do it. So
I just can't imagine what drilling it feels like in the pro peloton when, you know, drilling it in the amateur cat 1-2-3s feels like you're about to die. What?
You ever watch these like these crit races, like NorCal Cycling? Yeah, yeah. You ever watch his races where he's got all the power numbers and he's just racing like a Cat 1-2 Pro thing, and they're going 32 miles an hour, and they're surging at like 1,000 watts, and oh my gosh, I don't know.
And then it's rinse and repeat, and repeat
for 75 minutes.
Yeah.
So anyway, pretty crazy.
We are not worthy.
We're old, broken men.
That's right.
So it's a whole different thing. So pretty exciting that that happened. There are a few other big races going on. The Tour of Romandy. Did you guys see the prologue to that? They had a prologue for the Tour of Normandy. 2.4K. 2,400 meters. Prologue.
Seriously?
So it was a time trial. 2,400 meters with like 18 sharp turns in it.
Oh,
oh wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Interesting to see the power numbers on something like that. Like,
so it was really exciting to watch, actually, because everybody was on the verge of crashing on every corner. And some were on time trial bikes, some were on road bikes with time trial helmets, some were had disc wheels, but open front wheels, some were it was like it was across the board like strange, but it was
I think that's probably
2.5K
road bike with TT gear makes the most sense.
Right.
That's so weird.
You got to be able to corner tight.
Cause you just, and you want to be like, you're going to like stand up, like all the aero stuff is like kind of out the window in some ways, but the helmets are always going to work no matter what. Weird.
The
weird.
Guy who won it actually had gone earlier in the day when the roads were a bit drier. And so he can just corner faster when the roads are drier. And Julian Alaphilippe took third. In that stage. So, you know, he's trying to
MVP mount. Did get third, we should mention.
MVP did get third did at Liège Bastogne.
Did you already say that?
I did not say that.
That's pretty impressive.
Pogacar won. Behind him was Romain Bardet.
Romain Bardet.
Which was like...
Who's 84 years old.
Was like a minute back. And then there was the pack of like 30 guys or 20 guys. And Vanderpool was able to out-sprint them barely for third place. So he did make it on the podium, so it was not bad.
Yeah.
I don't have a whole lot else to talk about.
Do you guys want some breaking tech news right now?
Okay.
Yeah. Why not?
Stages Cycling.
Hold on.
Do you know about this?
Put a pin in that.
Okay.
Just put a pin in
that. Oh, is that your hot suggestion?
Put a pin in that.
Okay. No, we don't want your breaking news, Matt.
Okay. Let's not do breaking news.
Champ out. I'm looking at the results, seeing if I should mention something else, and I'm not going to mention anything else. Champ out.
Thank you, Champ.
That moves us to our hot seat questions all the faster. But we got to do Patreon first?
We're going to do that after. So
Patreon afterwards?
Yeah, if you're Patreon, stick around.
Good.
We'll talk to you after with the hot seat.
That's good, because we left people on the edge. We left people on the edge when I asked about stages.
Yeah. All right, here, real quick.
That's hot.
It's hot seat.
It is a hot
seat. That's pretty hot. Who would like to go?
You should go first.
You want me to go first?
You should go first.
All right. My hot seat question is, we talked about this, 5 or 6 weeks ago? Just talking about like the cycling industry and talking about like, you know, with everything going on with like the inflation and a lot of companies like price gouging and doing all this stuff. And we were talking about corrections and whatnot. And it seems like that shoe's starting to drop. It seems like there's a lot of stuff that's starting to happen and people are suffering. So my question to you guys is, are we at the bottom of it? Do you think that there's more to still fall out?
Oh.
Do you think that this year is going to be like death to many, many, many more cycling-related businesses?
Ooh, that's a good question.
So here's the thing. We've lost Wiggle. Wiggle was probably the world's biggest online.
Massive. Okay. But that was a year ago, wasn't it?
But I'm just talking recent month. Okay,
yeah, sure.
We're going to
keep going on. Planet Cycle, have you heard of that website before? Done. They're liquidating everything right now. Colorado Cyclist, another big website, liquidating everything right now. They're going under. Kona Bikes is potentially maybe, I mean, they had a booth set up at Sea Otter, and then all of a sudden they instructed everybody to tear it down and leave. And
in the middle of Sea Otter?
Right before it started. So, and with no explanation to anybody. And it sounds like their parent company is either going to like try and sell them off or make it go away. It might be liquidated. Who knows? They might just sell the brand name.
You don't want to be at Seattle announcing all the new stuff that's coming and be like, oh wait.
Yeah. They were supposed
to just like,
yeah, they were supposed to announce some new gravel bike, and then they just pretty much put a cease on everything. Like, you are not to spend a single dollar. Do not proceed with anything else. People are losing jobs, which kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Across the industry, you're constantly hearing about, you know, Specialized and Trek and BMC, and all these people are like, they're laying off people in droves. You've got Trek is closing down some of their stores, and I don't know if you're paying attention, but they've been buying up bike stores, local bike shops for a couple of years now, and they've been building this massive infrastructure of shops that are now Trek stores. They're starting to close those down because they're not successful, or there's financial issues, or they're just trying to, I mean,
was there one in the Portland area? Was it the
Bicycle Gallery? Yeah, they're still there. They're still functioning. It's not that one, but there's across the country, they are closing them down. Mm. And it's
that'd be a shame, because that place has been around forever.
The bike gallery?
Well, I'm thinking of the bike shop on like the Hollywood Sandy area.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah. They bought all of the bike gallery stores, so they've got multiple Trek concept stores now. Okay. You've got Shimano. They had a terrible year last year. I don't know if you guys saw, but I think their year over year, they were down like 25%. This year in the first quarter alone, they're down another 23%. They're just getting their backside handed to them. And then, like Matt said, Stage of Cycling just announced yesterday that they have laid off their entire workforce and they're shutting down operations completely.
It's going away?
Done. They're done.
So is no more stages?
Do we know that officially, though?
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's nothing from Stages other than like everyone saying like they laid off everyone.
They did,
because you're,
oh my god,
because you are a dealer for Stage.
We still are. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's still the funny thing, because we just had somebody ask me like, hey, can you go look and see if you can give me a dual sided Stages power? Oh yeah, sure. Let me go pull that up. And went on to the B2B and like everything was sold out. And like, yeah, that's really weird. That's and I'm like, I know that like all of like the big brands like Shimano SRAM and all those good guys, they have so much product right now that they're trying to move. And you would think that Stages would be getting their hands on that stuff hand over fist to try and get, you know, stuff put out into the marketplace. Like, why would you not have anything? And then it was probably, that was probably like 10 or 12 days ago. And then yesterday that just popped up that they're ceasing operations. So I'll pull up another article that I read.
They haven't said anything official, but it sounds like they're just closing shop.
Oh my God.
Stage of Cycling ceases operations and lays off entire staff.
Yeah,
so that's kind insane of what the report is saying.
Don't they have a big operation in Portland?
Yeah.
They do. They have all their stationary bikes.
Yeah.
They're based in Colorado, but they have their other big hub is right here in the Portland area. So
really, this the demand side. Demand has fallen off a cliff, basically.
Well, there's a bunch of things going on. You know, people are struggling right now financially. Yeah. It's, you know, not everybody's got gobs of extra money sitting around.
But also, I think probably a lot of what's happened is that during the pandemic, there was a huge resurgence of people getting out on their bikes and cycling. And really, there's only so much you can sell to a cyclist, I would think. You know, there's not that much that actually wears out. So it's a big job persuading people who are, as you said, struggling financially to drop money on something that's really not going to bring them anything extra.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, if you look at like the rate of inflation, you look and you lay that over what people's wages have gained, there's a mass discrepancy there. And the cost for a person went up, I think it was like $12,000 per household, if I'm not mistaken. So like what you bought like 2 years ago or back in 2021, now it's like $12,000 more. And that's for your groceries, your gas, your rent, if you're paying that kind of stuff. And that's what they figured out the national average was. So if you lose $12,000 of your discretionary income because your wages didn't keep up with inflation, you're not going to have that money to spend on stuff. And then you have all of the cycling companies that, yes, pandemic, everything was a massive spike. You couldn't get anything, right? And then they started making stuff as fast as they possibly could. But all the while, they were actually like really like kind of price gouging. All of their prices went up way beyond what inflation was. And people were still paying those prices because that was the thing. Everybody's trying to get bike-related stuff. And then all of a sudden, things started to cool off. And all of a sudden, all of the bike shops that were told, like, hey, if you want to have product in stock, you've got to order as much stuff as you possibly can, because it's the people that have the biggest orders that are going to go to the top of the line that will get their stuff first. Well, that happened. And then all the stuff shipped. And then all of a sudden, everything cooled off. And they've got all of this extra product. And then the the brands, the companies, the businesses were starting to ramp up their production cycles as well. And all of a sudden they've got a bunch of stuff and the shops are like, yeah, I can't be bringing any of this stuff in right now because it's not selling. It's just sitting on the shelves and I can't like get the new stuff without selling the old stuff first because I need the money and the capital to keep things going and I'm not going to go in the hole. And then all of a sudden everything's kind of starting to dip down and then you've got businesses going out of business like the Colorado Cyclist, for instance. Like you go on their website right now, everything's like up to 30% off. So you can go out there and find yourself a steal of a deal. So like your regular shops are like, I can't compete with that. If I'm going to compete with that, then I'm not going to make any money or I could potentially lose money if I'm trying to make up for that. So that's just another ripple effect.
So you don't think, I mean, the narrative right now is that people are, there's blowback about these super high prices that the bike industry have been.
There's blowback, there's lack of funds, and there's people are just kind of sitting tight. And why are you going to go to all of these places and you know, spend your good money? If you just are patient or if you do a little bit of sleuthing around on the internet, you're going to find it for super cheap. So a lot of places just aren't. And I don't have any statistics, but I have to imagine that in the last year or two, bike shops have been dropping like flies. I mean, they have to have been going out of business.
But also, like, if you have a bike or a couple of bikes, what's the incentive to buy another one? You know, that's what the industry has always tried to do is incentivize people that already have a bike to buy another bike because of whatever new technology.
Yeah.
You know, like disc brakes came in or electronic shifting or whatever you When there was no other way to upgrade it aside from just going out and buying another bike, but right now there's no reason to do that, right?
Yeah,
so
there's
if you're
nothing.
A cyclist, what? Why do you really want to spend any more at this moment?
Yeah, and that's the big question right there. It's because there's going to be a cycle to how long the average person keeps their bike. Some are going to be a little bit more, some are going to be a little bit less. You average it all out, and what would you guys guess? 4 or 5 years a person keeps a bike before they turn it over and get something new?
Yeah. I think it's going to be pretty wide variety. I mean, Lance probably turns over bikes more like once a year. You're buying bikes pretty frequently.
I would actually beg to differ with that. He actually holds on to them too long. If you ask me,
you hold on to old bikes, but you also pick up bikes and stuff.
My last road bike, I rode for 3 years.
You got a new gravel bike over there, Neil?
Yes, but I rode the other gravel bike.
For almost four. Yeah.
I know, but there's other bikes. There's just always a different bike.
But no, my problem is I don't sell the old bikes. They're just they're just hung up in the rafters.
Yeah, and I think
anybody want to buy
I think that
a
there
bike?
Are a lot of people that I mean, my wife got a bike in college and hasn't changed it.
Yeah, so you got to look at your whole cycling demographic, and there's going to be people that are going to be like your casual fair rider person that will ride a couple times in the summertime, and they don't really have that need for performance and all that stuff. And then you've got your high-end performance person, and that's going to be like a person that's going to have a lot of affluency or like disposable income. And then you got the other person that's just kind of getting by. So when you average everything out, I mean, how many years is it really before people are going to want to turn a bike over?
I think you're probably right. Average 5, maybe?
Ish, yeah. So,
because there's so many of those people that buy once every 10 years.
How many people went and bought bikes in 2020?
Everybody who didn't have one.
Yeah. So everything is still like, everybody's like kind of waiting right now. And they're like, you know, because I just got my bike back in 2020, 2021. I've still got another 2 or 3 years of getting good rides out of this thing. So that was kind of one of my metrics. It's like, right, where did we see a big spike in terms of bicycles purchased? And it was going to be that 2020-21 area. Man. And then if you go out 5 or 6 years or 4 or 5 years, that's probably when you're going to start to see things cycle over. And the only thing that's going to really change that is if there's some big revolutionary change in bikes. But as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, they do everything in small increments and they're doing just enough to get you to maybe think about buying your bike. You know, you and I and all of us here at this table might want to turn over a bike every 2 or 3 years. But that's we're not the average person.
No,
maybe people are coming around to the truth of it all, where you should be spending money on yourself and your own performance rather than the latest gadgets for your bike.
You know, sometimes there's something to be said about it, but you mentioned I don't disagree with you. I mean, there's not going to be a huge quantum difference between a bike that's, you know, 4 years old, maybe 5 years old with disc brakes as opposed to a bike that's now current brand new. I mean, there's not going to be a massive difference.
Right. No.
So how
I think it's interesting to look at that. Like, so you can see this if you look at like population charts. You can see like there's a baby boomer and there's like this big thing. But then after that, it's like every, I don't know, 25 years or whatever, you see these waves in the population. It's really interesting. And it's the waves get smaller and smaller and smaller, right? Because the baby boomers are big and they have a massive group, but then they have babies. And so, but it comes in these waves. And then that gets like that wave gets smaller and smaller. And you can see it in these population charts, but it'd be interesting to see if something like the pandemic causes waves in the cycling industry where it's like, oh, you see every 5 years. My guess is that it's less pronounced because people buy bikes at such different rates.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
just, it'd be very interesting to see if like the next 2 years things start to pick up.
I mean, you got to think about too, like the people that are trying to buy bikes or should be thinking about buying bikes are probably, you know, in their late 20s, early 30s that are like coming into the scene, and maybe they did get their bike hands on a bike back in the pandemic times. But these are also the same people that are like starting to have families. They're trying to save up money to buy a house, and they're trying to like establish themselves and get by. Well, all of a sudden their cost of living went up, you know, $10,000, $12,000, $14,000 a year, and they're not making that much more money. And, you know, not to mention the fact that God, like to make enough money to have a down payment for a house these days, that's going to be something legitimate that you're not going to get completely robbed on the mortgage. That's a lot of money because the cost of houses are astronomical right now. And then the loans, you're what, 7.5, 8%, something like that, as opposed to back in the pandemic times when it was like 2.5, 3, 3.5%. I mean, your cost for the same mortgage now as opposed to back then is probably another $10,000, $12,000, $15,000. So that's discretionary income that you can't throw at a sport that can be a little bit on the expensive side. So they're probably looking at used bikes if they're getting into the market, or they're really waiting to find that steal of a deal of a bike that's still floating around from 2 years ago that somebody's like just definitely trying to get rid of. So that just doesn't help the cycling industry.
So feel free to decline to answer this. How's the shop doing? I mean, you've been pretty smart. You're not the kind of shop that has to worry about like taking on massive debt, and now our debt is more expensive because interest rates are a certain way. Like you've dodged a bullet in that regard. But if the market is really taking this massive dip, I mean, it should affect your store.
You know what? It's really weird. We are definitely insulated because that's the way I built the company. I didn't ever want it to be in a position where like when things went bad, I just want us to make a little less money as opposed to being in a situation where we're not making money or losing money. So that's kind of where we're sitting pretty. It's kind of odd though, because like bikes, like you'll go for like a week or two or three and you don't sell any bikes, and all of a sudden you'll have like a week where you sell like three or four or five, and like, oh, that's kind of cool. But on the whole, we're doing well. I mean, we're starting to get a little bit more reach with our website. We're staying busy pretty much year round with the service work, and it's definitely like starting to peak right now. I think we've got I don't even know how many open service tickets right now, but we're cranking through all of that. We're doing pretty good on the accessories and all that stuff, so we're fine. I'm not worried about us in any way, shape, or form.
I mean, can you tell? Like, I mean, 2020 was like insane, right? But like, can you tell like the difference between 2022 or something like that, and like this year, are you seeing like, oh yeah, numbers are a little bit different?
That's a good question. Just because we're getting more reach and we're doing more,
it's hard to tell.
It's more diverse in terms of what we're doing. Like there's certain segments that are definitely down, but when you look at the global picture, we're still showing year over year growth, which is good. I'm not going to complain about that. Yeah. And we're going to maintain this whole, like, let's play it smart and let's keep our overhead low and let's, you know, take care of everybody and make sure that we're doing everything we have to do. So I'm just,
if it was poorly managed or poorly, looked after, then we'd be suffering. Like a lot of bike shops are suffering. There's a lot of bike shops that are suffering. Case in point, Trek.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't think that
aren't managed properly. But because Jake has been very cautious about
it's more that it's about like being conservative versus aggressive. And I don't necessarily think that it's bad to be aggressive all the time. I mean, there's taking debt. It's there for a reason. A lot of companies do it. It just gets to be tricky when it's you're depending upon it, and interest rates are where they are. So
Well, that's the one thing for us too, is we have zero debt. So that's a position that I always want to be in if at all possible. But anyway, I'm just curious though, seriously, like, do you guys think that we're nearing the bottom, or do you think that there's still going to be a lot more fallout and there's just more, you know, more businesses to fall? Or
I think there's still room to fall further.
I agree.
Because the pressure on people's personal finances isn't easing off anytime soon. Inflation is still not where the Fed wants it to be, so interest rates are going to stay high for a while. I'm not an economist, but you know, you can feel it out there. You know, people are still still not well off.
Yeah,
don't have money to spend on extra stuff like bikes.
I was having conversations with people, and I told them that I thought it's going to be a full another year until the end of 2024, probably going into the spring of 25 before we start to see like a little bit of like normalcy, everything kind of level out a little bit and see, you know, the cycling industry start to thrive again. I just hope that once it does start to thrive again, that everybody doesn't get that sense of greed again and then wants to all of a sudden start jacking up prices. I just want them to stay consistent, and I want to be able to take care of customers, and I want people to get good prices and good quality products for, you know, for the foreseeable future. So I'm really hoping that's the case. But you guys have any more thoughts about this?
You know, Sea Otter was as big and as crazy and as busy as ever, you know, like 1,000. There was 900 vendors at Sea Otter. Yeah. It's gigantic, but it is the industry show now that Interbike has gone away. Yep. We don't have Interbike anymore. And so anybody who's
in general, there's just less of these trade shows.
Yes. There aren't.
Which I think is okay.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's okay.
It felt like a bad vibe. Like, I think a lot of that was like pandemic was like, oh, all of them get shut down. Now we're like,
oh, we don't really need it.
Do we need these?
Well, here's another key metric to look at too. Cause like during the pandemic, everybody was out riding bikes, but it was that kind of waned real quick. And I feel like in 2023, that really started to like slide, and you don't have as many people riding consistently. But I also felt like the people that were your competitive, like let's go out and rock this thing and we're going to go out there and race and all that stuff. I felt like in 23, maybe even late 22, it was still a little on the slow side, but I feel like in 2024, we're starting to see an uptick in the number of registrations at races, at least here locally. Would you guys disagree with that?
I wouldn't disagree. Yeah. The race registrations are up.
So that's a good key sign that's a sign of health that we want to see.
Yeah. Maybe that's one of those like canary signs where it's like, oh, yep, this looks like we're starting to turn things around. Maybe I actually think that your insight into be like about a year from now, things might start to look about right.
Should be interesting
around a little bit. That's where that's the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah. If you're in the market for a bicycle though, I'm not going to plug down, but you can give us a shout if you want. But I do think that right now is probably one of the best times because there are so many people out there that are just like dumping stuff for a song. For far less than what MSRP is. And a lot of these people are getting around like the MAP policy stuff. And I think that some of the major brands are kind of like turning their cheek to that just in the hopes that they can move some product and bring in some new stuff. But that's still causing harm. It's like a ripple effect that goes and helps the consumer, but it hurts the industry. So,
yes.
But if you're hungry for a deal, go jump online and just search bike shop or bike company or bike website going out of business. And you'll find a few that you can get a steal of a deal.
Sage's Power Meter.
Yeah,
I'm kind of blown away about that.
I know.
I mean, like
supposedly
if you have Shimano, if you have Shimano drivetrain, Shimano doesn't have their own power meter,
and they do.
They do. I've never tested it, but they might as well not have a power meter.
But they might as well not have. Yeah,
it's that bad,
right?
Supposedly Stages was $14 million in debt to Giant. When they were like, yeah, no, I'm sure going bankrupt.
I believe it was Giant too that was having some financial struggles, and they weren't paying some of their suppliers because they had like a big sums of money that were coming due, and they were trying to play this whole clamshell game, moving things around. Right? So, I mean, everybody's having problems in the industry, and they just overcalculated, and they thought that, you know, it was going to be COVID times for the rest of life, and that's not the case. So anyway, I don't know how much more you guys want to talk about this. If you want to jump into the next one, if anybody else got anything to say on that.
How many Stages power meters do you have? I think I have like 3.
I think I have 3. Yeah.
I sold all mine. I'm all cork.
That's got to be pressure on Stages, though, that the OEM people are.
Does anyone have a Stages
have their own
cycling
power
computer?
Meters now? Like SRAM has a power meter, Shimano does. And it's like,
that's the other thing. I think that, you know, if you're a power meter company, it's hard because you're competing with all the big dogs that you've always been competing with.
Right.
But also now, like a lot of these Chinese manufacturers are coming on that are like, oh, in there, if they figure out the accuracy, which always takes a couple of years, but then they figure it out, it's like, oh, now really we're racing to the bottom as far as price goes.
Right.
Yeah, power has definitely gotten a heck of a lot cheaper.
Oh, man.
I mean, you can get solid power meters for $300-$400 now, which is fantastic.
It's crazy.
You know, it's like plus or minus 1% accuracy, which is...
Yeah,
that's what you want. So I can remember just, I don't know, like a decade ago, if you wanted good power, you're paying well over $1,000. Yeah.
It's
so
very interesting how fast the prices have dropped.
Bonkers.
And I feel like that $300-$400 is bottomed out, but maybe I'm wrong. We'll see.
Cool. All right, let's move on to the next one. Matt, would you like to go next?
Sure.
Got your hot seat question?
Yeah, it was going to be Stage of Cycling, but Jake blew it.
I'm sorry.
Jake stole my question too. I was going to ask him
about Stages.
Not really.
Tadej Pogacar. He looks like he is a strong...
Gosh, dang it. That was my other question.
He looks like a strong cyclist.
He's okay.
I can read your mind, Lance. And I just read your mind for fun sometimes. And then I just pick your question. It's a scary place. I have nightmares. Tadej Pogacar is looking somewhat strong. He looks unbeatable. Can he go for 3 Grand Tours this year?
He's doing the Giro.
Yep.
He's doing the Giro in prep for the Tour, which seems crazy, but
okay. So I'm just gonna throw some stuff out here. I think the Giro he looks pretty good. He's looking good.
Well, all the other like Giro favorites thing. All
here's a crashed
out. All I mean, all your big heavy hitters like that.
Do you think he needs to go all out 100% to win the Giro, or do you think he can get it done at like 85-90%
like and just call it the training race?
I don't even think it's like a go all out because I think he's got enough matches. He's fine. I think he can burn some and go hard on some of those days. The thing is, he's got to stay upright. You got to stay healthy. Because if he does that, he wins the Giro. He goes into the Tour looking very good. And it's his race to lose at the Tour. And then you've got 2 Grand Tours in your pocket. And what do you do then?
You just go to the Vuelta.
You have to start looking. And you know, if you crap the bed in the first week, I'm just gonna go ride. Yeah. Right, who on the team wants to have this and I'll be your domestic? So
yeah,
you have to
or whatever.
Your biggest rival Vingegaard is out right now. So even if he's back to healthy again by the Tour, he's missed a whole block of training.
Jonas back on the bike yet?
He's not. Oh. He just got out of the hospital last weekend.
Yeah, I'd imagine he's probably on a trainer though. I bet
they had him in the hospital on a trainer. In fact, his power that he was putting out supplied power for the entire hospital.
Was double what yours is normally.
Yeah, it was. It was one. He was one leg in it.
It was one leg in it,
and it was still double my power.
I think Remco's back on the bike and riding, and I think he's going to be. There's a race coming up. I saw something somewhere that I think he's gonna line up
he's
at.
He's gonna try to do.
Yeah.
So,
he didn't get hurt as bad. He just broke his collarbone.
Yeah. So. I look at that and I'm thinking like if he stays healthy, it's just a show.
If Pogacar makes it through the first week at the Tour, he'll win that race, I'm sure. I mean, it's always The first week is always messy. Anything can happen.
Well, look at him last year. What was his problem? He didn't win last year. Why? He crashed.
He crashed and broke his wrist.
And he missed some important prep for the Tour. And so wasn't quite firing on all cylinders. Clearly he's freaking
What's interesting is that still, even after that, after not coming into the Tour perfect or whatever, it was still a 2-man race. And that other man isn't going to be racing. It's just so, they are so far above, those two athletes are so far above the rest of the field. It's ridiculous.
You got to wonder if all the other teams are conspiring right now to say, look, if we need to beat Pogacar, what can we do together to
right. If more than one team gets together.
Yeah.
Is that against the UCI?
Yes, it is. But
what do you do? I just don't think, I mean, what do you do? Like let's just say you throw multiple teams together. How do you beat them? He calls the shots. He's like, hey, here's where I'm gonna go. I'm gonna take the lead on this hill. I'm telling the entire field.
I'm
going here. I just think
Jumbo Visma managed to stick it to him two years ago. And it wasn't just because Vingegaard was so strong. They worked so well as a team.
They did.
And they exploited his kind of drive to win everything his disadvantage and blew him up.
That was actually one of the best days of cycling to watch. It was just like punch after punch after punch.
It was great.
And it was fantastic to watch.
So I've just read a little article here. It was posted 6 days ago. So they've got, from the time that he was released from the hospital, that he's going home, and then they're going to start him into a plan. Jonas Vingegaard. They're going to have him going out doing some walks, and then that will progress into some roller stuff, and then it'll progress into the outside. They're giving him a 2-week timeline for full evaluation to determine whether or not he's going to be able to have the ability to compete at the Tour de France or be healthy enough to actually train to get there. So that's kind of what their forecast is. So you got him about another week and a day or two. before we find out whether or not he'll even go to the tour. Knowing him, he's turning into a little bit of a fierce competitor. He's going to do everything he possibly can. And if he's on the bubble, I think that he's going to push forward until he knows for sure that he can't do it or just can't produce the numbers or if he's having pain or discomfort.
He can't walk now, but there's a good chance he'll be second at the tour.
Yeah, he's super motivated.
It's just ridiculous. These guys are ridiculous.
Yeah. So, and then you guys have seen that Wild's back on the bike.
That's good.
He had a new bike day. He was riding his brand new Cervelo mountain bike.
He's riding a mountain bike, yeah.
And he is going to start training, getting ready for the Tour de France now because he's not going to the Giro.
His plan was initially to go to the Giro.
And to go for GC.
And to go for GC. Clearly, that's
I was going to ask, who is going to be Jumbo's leader then?
At the Giro?
No, at the tour.
A little guy named Sepp Kuss.
Yeah, probably.
Could be.
I mean, Mateo Jorgensen.
Awesome. Mateo Jorgensen.
Yeah, he's looking pretty strong too. Yeah. So, but
hey,
Mateo's had a better spring than Sepp has.
Huh?
I haven't really seen much from Sepp.
No.
Sepp doesn't want to be in the spotlight. He just wants to do Sepp things on the bike and pull people up hills.
I'll sign up a $3 million a year contract for
to
pull people up hills.
There you go. Cool.
That part will be very interesting to watch. I'll be very excited to watch Sepp in the tour.
Remind me, Matt, what was your question?
I forget.
Tade
for three.
Will he go for three?
No.
Will he go for all three tours?
Could he? Anyone willing to put their money down?
I don't know what your question is.
Is anyone willing to put money down that he's going to win three grand tours in a single year?
I think he's got two in his pocket. And that third one?
No, he won't win the Vuelta.
You don't think he'll win the Vuelta?
You think he'll win the first two and still a good...
That's my prediction.
Okay. We got two here.
I think Ineos is going to just drill him at the Giro. I think they're going to try to exploit him and break him at the Giro.
Okay.
With Geraint Taint.
With Geraint.
Mr. Taint.
With Mr. Taint.
Mr. Taint.
Mr. Taint is gunning for...
They got some bullets.
The Giro. They got some bullets.
They got some guys.
They do.
Yeah.
I don't think that they beat him because...
Bernal look good.
Egan Bernal looks
He's coming
good.
Around.
Yep. The comment that he had made about him getting exploited a couple of years ago, I think might come back to potentially haunt him at the Giro, but I still think he is going to prevail. But the question is, did he shoot too many bullets at the Giro to really go after it at the Tour?
Yeah.
That's going to drain him a lot. But I still think on paper, he's the guy to beat, and he's going to be the one that's going to win the Tour. Now the question is like, all right, well, you've got the Giro, you've got the Tour in your back pocket. Can you go do the Vuelta as well? I'm going to say yes, even though in my gut, I'm saying that he's not going to be able to do it.
So Lance is saying he's not even going to win the first one.
That's what I'm saying.
And then what about the Tour? You think he might win that one?
Yeah.
And then what about?
Then he'll be super motivated for the Tour and just freaking walk away from it.
Okay, that seems possible.
Yeah.
Jake is going all three.
Yeah, I just want to see something cool happen.
Slam.
I want to see it happen. I don't think he's going to be able to do it at the Giro, or not the Giro, but I'm sorry, the Vuelta. Vuelta. I think you're going to have like someone like even like a Remco Evenepoel that's going to try and disrupt because feels like he's got something to prove. He's done well there. And I think that Primoz Roglic is going to be pissed off because he's going to get beat everywhere. So he's going to show up there and like, dang it, I'm going to win myself a Grand Tour. So there's going to be a lot of people that are going to come out swinging. Will Wout show up there too?
At the Vuelta?
The Vuelta.
Hard to say.
His year got screwed up. And if his training comes around, he rides well at the Tour, then
he's got good fitness. He's a busy man.
Yeah. He doesn't really care about cyclocross. No. He's because won that crap
because
in the
because he can show up whenever.
I think Jumbo is going to want Kuss to defend his Vuelta.
I don't think Sepp Kuss is going to want to defend his Vuelta.
No? Poor Sepp. No one even himself wants him to defend that.
I just don't think he likes the spotlight.
I like Jake's answer. I'm going to say that yes, that we have a grand slam of tours this summer.
I need to go buy a lottery ticket. Matt has agreed with me way too many times today.
Thumbs up. Yeah, it's true. I usually disagree. I like to disagree.
Hey, Matt, I like your picks today.
Good stuff. That'll be fun to watch. It would be fun to see. It would be historical. Yes. It'd be neat. Yeah.
It'd be something fun for us to talk about. So, all right. Anything else on that one?
Nope.
Is that what you guys get the same question?
You two jokers want to Rochambeau to see who goes next, or somebody want to like grab the bull by the horns and get her done?
Ian.
I got it. What do you guys think makes a good sprinter? Let me narrow that down a little bit.
Feels bad and still throws down over 1,000 watts.
Outside, yeah.
Makes me look like a chump.
Veins in his legs.
Outside of the pro Peloton. So you know, with these pros like, I don't know, Cavendish and those guys, you know physiologically they are gifted to become sprinters. They've got the fast twitch muscle fibers. They're just... they have that engine, but you know, when you're racing at our level, when you don't have a team that's going to have that, you don't train specifically to sprint all the time. You everybody's trying to be a more well-rounded cyclist. You don't have just that one job to do. Mm-hmm. What differentiates one person from winning a sprint race from another?
We talk about like crafty riders a lot. And it's like that person that can always float wheels and figure out like, oh man, he doesn't have the team to do this, but yet he still comes out and wins. It's that person that's just like, they just have a good feel for the pack and where to be at the right time. That I think is like one of those things where it's like, yeah, there's the physics of it. Like you've got to be able to put out more than triple digits, we'll just say. But yeah, you got to have some, you know, psychological or physiological aspects of your body to be able to sprint, because everyone can kind of get up and go. But like being able to put yourself in the right position to take advantage of that, I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, you have to have somebody that's smart, that is very keen on paying attention to the group of riders that he's with. You got to know who the players are, and you got to know the mistakes that other people are willing to make. And then you've got to know how to, like, if you don't have a team, you got to know how to like ride wheels and, you know, take advantage of people as much as you can without getting or pissing somebody off that's going to, you know, put you in a gutter or do something wrong to you. But yeah, you got to save your bolts. You got to be somewhat smart, but at the same time, you got to be a little bit dumb too, because you got to not be afraid to getting hurt. So, or at least have that switch in your brain that you can turn it off. Because when you get into a sprint, it's not uncommon to be going like 35, 40 miles an hour, and you're in very close proximity to other people, and just takes the slightest little thing to go wrong, and the next thing you know, you're flying over your bars and hitting the deck and big giant pile up, and everybody's getting hurt. I mean, we've seen some pretty nasty crashes in some pro races at the finish that, you know, you got guys that are like not fighting for their life, but man, that was bad. And they recover, they get back on their bike and they go do it again. I mean, granted, there's a love for it, but you've got to have the ability to shut that off. That, like, I don't know, it's like kind of like a fight or flight, but you don't have the, like the flight part of it in you. It's like that whole thing's working, but you're not afraid of the situation. So
I think that's where I was going with this, like the mental side of things. I think you have to be very competitive,
yes,
driven. You have a need to win that race. Like, yeah. I've been out with guys who never sprint, and then when we go out on a flogging ride or one of the other spirited group rides, they're right up there. They can out sprint you. Mm-hmm. And I remember riding with Mike Myers, our friend there, and he, you know, out on Larch Mountain. And we went for this one little uphill kicker, and he completely out sprinted me. Ah. And I'm like, you're not a sprinter. You don't do this. He's like, yeah, I don't sprint in a race.
Yeah.
Too dangerous, right?
But the good doctor being smart.
Yeah, yeah. So there is that. There's the having the balls, if you will, you know, being brave, but being competitive, being driven. Mm-hmm. That you want to win that race. Like a lot of guys will just shut it down. They don't care that much.
I think
that
there's a lot to be said about being a good strategist as well, in that it's not just like where you're at, like when you're like 200 meters to go, but there's a lot of stuff that gets set up, you know, like the lead in. Like if we're talking about like one of our races, like I'm kind of thinking about it like 4, 5, 6 miles out. Like, all right, what position's going on? Who's doing what? Who's looking like they're doing this, that, and the other? How can we abuse these people? How many times did they try and break away? Were there any breaks going on? Like, what's their energy level? So it's kind of like a video game. You're looking at like what's their power level at? Like, how much do they have left? How many bullets do they have left to shoot in their gun, kind of stuff? And so I'm constantly like weighing all of that stuff out. And I know for me personally, I know how many watts I can hold for how long out, depending if it's going to be 50, 100, 150, a mile. It doesn't matter. I know how many watts I can hold, and I'm constantly paying attention to the work that I did during the course of the race or the ride or whatever that we did, knowing that I need to leave enough for all of those different scenarios to work out. And if I do burn too many matches or shoot a few too many bullets, I slowly start taking things off of the menu of like, all right, you can't do that 1 mile an hour attack. That's just not going to happen today. You just don't have enough in you, but you still can do stuff from 1K out, you know, and kind of go. So you're constantly playing that, but you're also like, you know, paying attention yourself. You're watching the other people. And then you're, while you're doing that, you're also thinking about, right, if everybody's kind of doing their turn, doing the pulls and all that other stuff, I pay very close attention to where I'm at in the pace line, knowing that I have to do my turn and I want to make sure that I take my turn at the right time. And then I can manage how long I take my turn so that I can fall back around. I'll sometimes even take a longer pull, just knowing that I'm going to be able to cycle back to the back of that so that when it gets to the time to go, I'm going to be close to the front. I'm going to have two or three bikes in front of me so that I can line myself up and know like, all right, got to lead out train. It's a matter of we're good to go.
Like getting that timing figured out, which is tricky. I've noticed that even on those beaches, right? Which is weird. It's like, okay, if I take a longer pull here, then I'm going to come through and then we're going to come, it's going to be perfect lined up for the sprint.
Sure. Yep.
Whereas, and you see, and I wonder if other people are doing the same thing. You know what's interesting is we talk about like KG riders, and I just think a lot of it comes to experience. Mm-hmm. Even some people, they may be good at it at a young age, but I still think that it probably comes to the experience of being like, okay, maybe they started riding at a young age or whatever it is. They've been in a certain groups or whatever and have a good feel for those packs. I think it comes down to a lot of experience.
The experience is going to help you get to the right position, but it's whether you want it or not as well is a big thing. Yeah. I know, like one of our local races here, the PIR circuit race at Tuesday night or Monday night, you can feel it in the last lap. Like you can feel there's a huge surge of guys trying to get that position.
Yes.
Right, getting up to the front, making sure that they're in the best position they can. And then there's another half you can just feel just back off. Mm-hmm. Like they've done their race. Mm-hmm. They don't want to get involved in that stuff. So, yeah.
It's a combination of racecraft and desire and fearlessness.
Right.
And if you're missing one of those things. Yeah.
And power.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Right. Well, you have to do the work.
Yeah.
You'd have to done the work at some point or been God-given monster power, but you've had to be able to do the work to be able to use your racecraft and use your desire and use your fearlessness to be a good sprinter.
Yeah.
And be willing to freaking crash yourself out, which really sucks.
Yeah, it is fun watching people go through that whole like process of gaining the maturity, the experience, and the knowledge and know-how of all of that stuff works. And you know, the flogging ride's a perfect place for people to come out and like work on that and figure out like, all right, this is what I know I can do, and this is I figured out the hard way, this is what I can't do. And it's always funny when, you know, it for the flogging ride, for those that have never done it, it's, you know, it's like a little neutral rollout for like a mile, and then it's game on. And so it's about what would you say, like almost 10 miles to the regroup spot.
Yes.
And then it's
first
about
10 miles and then another 10 or 12 miles back.
So it's pretty much a race. And it was originally a situation where we would do like sprint points for all of the stop ahead signs, but that's kind of like fallen to the wayside. The lower categories will kind of do that.
Yes.
But for the A group, we're generally just first person to the regroup and first person back to the parking lot.
Yes.
And that's pretty much how it works.
Because if you're in the A group and you do the stop ahead sprints, you're getting dropped.
Yes. Yeah.
You're going to spend your bullets.
Yeah, we did that for a while, but and there's still a couple that are like coveted. On the way back, there's a couple of them where everybody just, there's certain ones that those ones just still kind of stuck and just kind of did that still. But anyway, it's always fun watching people come out and in their mind are like, oh, I'm going to break away. I'm going to solo off the front. And like that almost never happens. They just don't know that. So it's kind of funny because you know that like if they were to sit in, if they were to be patient and they were to play their cards right, they're going to put themselves in a much better position to do something fun in the last mile or like half mile or however long. But they'll go for these breaks and they'll get out there and you're just kind of chuckling like there's no way that you're going to make that stick. And you know what? Not only are you not going to make it stick, I'm going to sit up here on the front and I'm going to temper the pace of the group and we're just going to keep you in sight and we're going to watch you out there and we're going to let you cook and dangle out there off the front. And then all of a sudden you're going to pop. And you know what? That's when we ramp it up and I bring the Peloton by you at mock speed and you get spit out the back. And I'm like, you learned your lesson there, son. That's always a good one. So. Yeah. Anyway, it's just kind of fun. And that's the beauty of bike racing is it there's so many different scenarios. There's so many different ways it can play out. There's so much different strategy that you can put into it. And you get to play with your physiology. You get to play with your racecraft. You get to play with the fact that what other people have been up to, and then you kind of knowing where they're at. And you get to put all this together, and you're like, all right, how are we gonna navigate this today? It's not the same thing every single time. It's always a different story.
And a lot of people, quite rightly, know that the sprint at the end of the race is very unpredictable. Not everything's under your control. You may be boxed in, you may be crashed out, but so people that even people that do have a good sprint will try something else first, try to get away on the hill because it's too unpredictable. The sprint is the sort of last resort type of win for a lot of guys.
A split second decision can make a difference between second and 30th.
Yep.
Very easily.
Yeah. And look at any pro race, like any UCI race, you can watch, like, you've got the best sprinters in the world with the best lead out trains in the world. They make one small mistake, and then they went from being like a stage favorite to like, oh, you came in like 17th place.
Yes.
And it's just one of those things. So
I just love it. It's just such a great thing to watch a sprint unfold and all those things that go into it. And like we said, you need to have some horsepower.
Yeah,
but that's far from everything.
Yeah, that's the romantic part of road racing is all of these little nuances. And a lot of people look at it on paper, and they just or not paper. They'll watch a race and they don't really get it, and they've never been a part of it, and they don't understand how awesome that is to be in that moment, and then to go out and watch people and see like how much better they are than you, and watch them do this stuff, and to see certain people be able to like win stage after stage. I'm like, that's just unreal. It's incredible, and not to take anything away from like mountain biking and gravel racing, but you just don't have that same thing. It's like more of like a you against the clock kind of a thing. Yes. And there is, it seems like there's been a lot more like sprint finishes and gravel races and like small group bunches and whatnot because the quality of the racing is coming up. But more times than not, it's like just one person coming in by themselves that blew everybody away.
Or it's four people, not 40 people.
Correct. Yeah. So, and not for nothing, those are pretty fun too.
Yes.
So anyway, it's road racing is fun. All of the racing is fun. And that was a great question, Ian. Got anything else to throw at that?
Good question.
I'm all fired up about it.
Now, Lance, we've stolen all of the questions.
I got no questions.
How do you wax your mustache? That's the only question you got left. What was the fisticuffs wax?
Fisticuffs.
Only way to do it.
All right, Lance, what's your hot seat question?
I don't have a hot seat question.
Are you kidding me?
No, I don't.
Are you going to flog tonight? Yeah, there's your hot seat question.
I'm not flogging tonight. It is raining.
You got no questions.
No. Nothing? My question was, what do we do about Pogacar? That's initially.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah. What do we do about him?
What are the strategies?
What? How do you beat him? That was one, but we talked about that. My other question was, what's your favorite new tech that has come out of Sea Otter this week? But I'm looking through what came out.
Some gravel bikes, right?
There's nothing good.
Were there any big announcements?
There weren't any big announcements. There were some new bikes that were announced, some new cranks that were announced, new wheel sets, new seats, new helmets.
Well, so here's a question for you. Is it a good thing or a bad thing that they're not announcing cool new technology? Is it they could come out with something that's going to inspire people like, hey, I need to spend my money on that. Or does that cost too much money? And they've been dealing with financial woes for the past 2 years and they just don't have the wherewithal to put something out there right now.
I don't know. There's one thing I'm super interested in, but you just can't freaking get it.
Is it SRAM Red?
No.
Because so I don't know anything about SRAM Red or the Hammerhead Crew 3 or whatever. Rumors are May 15th. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, we got nothing yet.
Rumors.
No.
Rumors. I'm spreading rumors.
It's the RockShox flight attendant.
Oh, yeah.
The RockShox flight attendant.
Was that announced?
It wasn't announced at Sea Otter. It's been announced like
for a while.
But it's a smart suspension.
I just tried to make you laugh while you're talking.
It worked. Because freaking Matt just shotgunned his LaCroix and sprayed it everywhere. Flight attendant is RockShox. It's a smart suspension system that is wireless and battery operated. Mm-hmm. So it runs your front fork and your rear fork.
Suspension.
Just the suspension. And it dampens them and locks them out, depending on the terrain and your riding style.
Does it do it automatically?
It does it automatically.
And it gets to know who you are and what kind of riding you do, and it starts to build a profile about you, and it becomes even more intuitive.
You don't have to hit a button. You don't have to lock it out. You don't have to say, I'm sprinting. It just knows that you're sprinting, and it locks it out for you. It knows that you're climbing and puts it in the climbing gear.
It's like a Stark industry. Tony Stark made this.
I don't know. It's voodoo. It's from New Orleans is what it is. New Orleans. But anyway, it's super interesting, but it only comes on 5 bikes at the moment. There's only 5
frames.
You
can't get it separate.
No, you can't get it separate.
No, you can. We can purchase them from SRAM's RockShox, but they're not available. They're completely sold out. Yeah. There's a couple different models, and I think it's the non-SL model we can get as early as June, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. I looked at that. But they're
super
not cheap.
Intriguing.
They're super not cheap either. The... what is it? I'm gonna look up these prices here.
Let's hear some numbers.
I think
they like $2,000?
No, like $2,800.
So just for the forks for the non SL, which is like the little bit lighter weight, I think it is. It's $1,349, and then the ultimate one that is the SL is $1,449. So.
That's just the front
expensive.
Fork. That's not the rear suspension.
It's expensive to be on the bleeding edge, Lance.
The shock itself in the back is going to be $849. So all in, you're $2,300 for suspension. Yeah. And then you've got your $2,000 wheel set. You've got your $5,000 frame, and you've got your $3,000 group set.
I think there's some interesting things because SRAM owns so many of these different pieces of the puzzle. You start thinking about like, okay, well, if there's rattle in the pedals, can you increase suspension? Like there's weird things that you could communicate between all of these different components.
Yeah. It does communicate with the crankset. So it kind of knows what's going on there based on what kind of power.
Crazy.
Yeah. How much power you're putting out, how much suspension, you know, like what the terrain is you're on. It like takes all that into account. You know. It's crazy.
And there's like an Apple IIe computer that has to run all the math in the background.
You have to put it in a backpack in your back.
Wear it on a backpack.
This is a UCI ban waiting to happen.
I don't think so.
No, they're all using it.
Keegan Swenson.
Keegan Swenson had it on his mountain bike at
Seattle.
Waiting to happen. Yeah.
And not only this, he was so confident in the automatic ability of the suspension that he removed the lever, the pod, that would allow him to lock it out himself manually.
Which means he's probably been riding on it for a year.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
So, and he speaks pretty highly of it.
Yes.
Yeah. That's some fun toys right there.
Yeah, that's some fun toys. Anyway.
Maybe I'll have to ask for that for Christmas if I can.
There's a very interesting
good hot seat question. Yeah. Good hot seat question.
Yeah. There we go.
I hope we answered that for you.
I'll pull something out of you. So.
All right.
Do you think you'll get that?
You'll get it eventually. If
we carry a mountain bike in the shop that comes out with flight attendant on it,
Would you get it. Swap it out in your Spark?
Yeah, if I could.
So this summer you're going to get it?
Yeah.
That means your mountain bike's going to come up for sale.
Maybe.
That means I need to sell my mountain bike.
So you can buy my old one.
Keep this train going.
Yeah, let's go. I got a gravel bike for you.
I know. I want them all.
All right.
I want all the bikes.
Before we jump into one last thing, let's do the quick Patreon thing that we talked about. Lance is going to shake up the little jar here and pull out a name. There's nothing on that. That's just a piece of paper for add more patrons because, you know, more and more people want to add. We got to have something to write it down on. Let me turn this down a little bit. Patreons are able to enter into these little drawings. We'll pull it out of the hat. We've got a basket of goodies with all kinds of cool stuff in it. I can't tell you off the top of my head, but, you know, there's all kinds of fun stuff. And this person will get something out of that bin that they can pick. Who is it?
Christopher Reel.
Chris Reel.
Chris Sweet. Reel.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, just saw him this past weekend, actually.
He just did a race. He did
Madras, yeah.
He did Madras.
Bone Crusher, yeah.
Yeah, he did Bone Crusher.
And he was out at the Spring Classic Duathlon, too. He crushed it.
He did a duathlon and a mountain bike race? Yeah. Who is this person?
If you remember, Chris had a pretty serious medical episode last year.
He had a pretty bad medical episode last year.
We thought that he might be dumb, but my God, as he rallied and people came behind him and took good care of him, and he's fought hard and he's back doing his thing. So it's awesome.
Chris, you have won RockShox flight attendant.
Sponsored by Lance Hepler. All right, if you're interested in becoming a patron, you can go to dialedcycling.com and click on the fun stuff link up there at the top and go to the podcast. And then you can click on that little link that says Patreon. Go pick a Patreon that works best for you. And
it might be like the RockShox flight attendant socks. Like, it's like, oh, yeah. Or windshield wipers.
Or,
like, you just want a new car, windshield wiper blade. Lance, Jake, how was that spring classic?
It was good.
Good.
It was fun.
Yeah, there.
Lots of people. Yep.
Help lots of people.
That was going to be
busy. One last thing.
Ruining
the entire show.
I think Matt was looking at my notes.
I think I'm ruining the entire show.
Have you forgotten how the show works, Matt?
No.
It seems like
I've got it. It's up here somewhere. I'll remember eventually.
All right. On that note, let's jump into one last thing, Matt LeGrand.
Two videos this week.
Ooh, big time.
Well, they're both Koros videos. Koros software update video went out on Tuesday with their latest, greatest software. You can now do like this, we'll call it a screen mirroring thing, although Koros will change the name of it eventually, where you can show what's on your, or some of the metrics from your watch, you can show them onto your phone, as well as some mapping information too. So if you're going out hiking with your Koros watch and you want to have a little bit more fine detail, look at a map and stuff like that, you can actually zoom in on the map and see which trail you want to take. Or if you're doing an indoor bike ride or an indoor treadmill run or something like that, you can just pull up a screen that just has metrics on it. Not bad to see Koros update software. What's nice about Koros is that they take all of that software and they make sure they deploy it to all of their old devices, which I really respect.
That's cool.
It is. It's really nice because some companies don't do as good a job on that. Then this morning, I was working on a video until very, very early this morning, but they released, I don't have it on actually, they released a new watch called the Koros Vertex 2S. So they have the Koros Vertex 2. They didn't really have enough of an update to make it a Vertex 3, so they got the 2S. And it's kind of like their top-of-the-line watch that does everything, mega, mega long battery life for the most part, and yeah, it's $700, so it's kind of ends up being into a pretty competitive price point for Koros because there's a lot of good watches at that price. So if you're into ultra running, that typically is the group of people that I see that are using Koros watches. Although they are kind of starting to develop some cycling stuff. They have an FTP test now that's new as part of that software update. So might be something that's interesting, like for Dial to consider bringing in some Koros watches. Just
we've never carried them before, and I'm not.
I know you were thinking about it a couple years
ago.
We've
had a few people ask about it before in the past, and just never came around to
it. It's kind of like I think that it's very popular with trail runners, ultra runners, because they do have massive battery life.
Yeah.
And it'd be something to consider. It's tough. It'd be a tough call, I think, because if they start doing more cycling stuff, then it starts to look pretty good.
Makes that be a no-brainer.
Yeah, so. And I did. I used, when I went for my 20-miler with David Goodman, I used the new watch, and I used my bike. I basically used my phone as a bike computer with coming from the watch data. So the watch data was shared to the bike. I didn't say that right. The watch data was shared to my phone, which was being used as a bike computer for that entire ride.
Cool.
So, I mean, Apple can kind of do the same thing.
Yeah.
And we've talked about how that's a little bit not our favorite thing to do. It's nice to have a dedicated bike computer, but this works in a pinch.
Cool.
Okay. Sweet. That was one last thing.
Thank you, sir. Ian, what you got?
My last thing is much shorter than that, but yet again, I'm going to plug my race. Barton Park Road Race is now in kind of the advanced stages of preparation. It's looking good. I've had great response to my appeal for volunteers, so it looks like a bunch of people have been very generous with their time. They're going to help me out. Lance is going to help me out, which is going to be freaking awesome. To encourage everybody to sign up to race.
I think we
the
got
earlier
some...
you can do that, the better it is for me. The sign up is on obra.org.
Yeah, go to the schedule, look that up, and get yourself registered.
Yeah.
I think you've got some sponsors for the event. Now you want to give a shout-out to the sponsors that are helping
out? I would love to give a shout-out to Wahoo, who have been very generous and given us some great prizes.
Yep.
And
we've also got stuff coming in from Scratch.
Are you going to be able to give away a bike computer or something?
We will
Don't
be
know.
Giving away three bike computers.
Yep.
Top of the line.
Wow.
The Rome?
Like $280.
The Rome 2, probably.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Dang, man.
So it's looking good. I think it's going to be a great day.
And that's kind of all of our favorite computers.
It is. That's the consensus,
You use the Bolt.
I use the Bolt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep, you got one last thing?
I do. Two big races on the calendar this Sunday. We have the Coast Hills Classic Mountain Bike Race out in Newport, Oregon. It is part of our Oregon XC Series. I will not be going to that race. I'm missing it because the other race is the Gorge Gravel Grinder, which is happening in Duffer, Oregon.
Duffer.
Best Oregon city name there is, right behind Boring, Oregon.
Happy Valley.
Or Happy Valley. So Gorge Gravel Grinder is happening this Sunday. There's 1,100 participants.
Ooh, dude, did you see the start list?
Yes.
Like, freaking the stacked. old guys like me, 60-plus guys.
Wow.
Medium course, just that, 59 entrants.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And we're starting completely separately. It's our own field.
And there's only three categories. You can race open, 45 to 59, or 60-plus.
Really?
Yes. Okay. So he does his own weird categories, but that's what he's doing. And same with women. You can end the same with women. But I am going out there. Ian's doing the medium course. I'm doing the short course. And
you're doing the short course?
I'm doing the short
what
course.
What you do. It's what you do.
It's what I do. So we'll be rolling with that. So hopefully we have like 20 teammates that are going to this race. We have a ton of people
going.
I think
there might even be more than that.
Yeah, there might be more than that. Yeah. So we'll have team tents out there. Hopefully it doesn't rain on race day. They are getting some rain there right now, so it should make it interesting. That's
could
it.
Could make some hero dirt.
Yeah.
Hero gravel.
Yeah.
All right, my one last thing. It's actually another question. I want to know, how much should I charge for a workshop catered to athletes on how to pump up their tires?
Wait. Let's clarify.
This is from,
triathletes how to pump up their tires.
Yes, that's what I said. Workshop for triathletes to teach them how to pump up their tires. All right. I'm sorry. Sorry, Matt. Matt's giving me like the evil glare. And like he's got a
triathletes. Come on, guys.
Well, here's the thing.
They can't even.
The Spring Classic Duathlon was out there and providing the neutral mechanic support and all that other fun stuff. And it was actually, it was a beautiful morning. It was a great day. Hats off to Y Racing, put off another great event. They broke a record for attendance.
Oh, good.
Which is fantastic. They had some super fast people out there, which was a lot of fun to watch as well. So I get out there and I set up. The only gripe I had is, for whatever reason, they pushed it back a couple hours this year.
Oh, right,
they started later. Yeah. So usually I'd get out there and get set up between like 6:30 and 7. And I thought that was going to be the case again this year, but that wasn't. So I wasn't supposed to be out there and ready to go until 9 o'clock in the morning, which is really late. But I digress. It's not a big deal. I get out there. I'm all set up at 8:30, and like the race, I think started at 11. I think something like that. The duathlon did. So you got all the bike people starting to come in, and it was like kind of crickets for a while because usually there's like a line out the door from right the get go. As soon as I get set up, I'm working on bikes and mostly pumping up tires, but. And then slowly but surely, people started to trickle over. And I love when I show up and I'm able to help people and save their race. Now, it still makes me scratch my head a little bit that you didn't solve that problem before you went to a race that you've known about for some time.
Like, what if you weren't there?
Exactly.
You'd just be like, well, I don't have this bike that doesn't work.
You know, for instance, there was a lady that came down and she was having a really bad brake problem. And the brake was fully rubbing. It was a rim brake. It was fully rubbing. She drove all the way down from Tacoma. And she's like, I think I need to go. I don't think this is something you can fix, but I figured I'd ask you if you could. I drove all the way down here from Tacoma. I'm like, we got to get that fixed for you. That's too far to drive for you to not be able to do this race that you've known about.
The swim of the race, and then what are you going to do?
Well, it's not even a swim. It's a run bike run.
Oh.
So,
well,
yeah, it's a duathlon. But anyway. So I put the bike up in the stand and sure enough, I was able to get fixed in just a few minutes. And she was like, oh my God, thank you so much. You saved my race. I was going to have to go home and yada, yada, yada. She's like, how much do I owe you? I'm like, nothing. I'm like, high five. That's what I was charging for people out there. So those kinds of things were kind of the things that I love to be able to go out there and help people do. And there was a few other
the only thing you love more, pumping up tires.
Exactly. And there was about 5 or 6 people that had like legitimate little fixes that they needed to have fixed. Yeah. And I'm like, there's nobody coming out here asking for their tires to pump up. This is great. And it was like excited. 20 minutes before the start, all of a sudden there was like a parade of people coming up and it was like, they were all following each other. Like the Pied Piper was leading him over. Like, we're gonna get our wheels pumped by Jake. And it was one of those things where it's like,
so weird.
And like, and I don't say it in a mean way. I don't say it in a condescending way, but can you pump up my tires? Oh yeah. The pump's right over there. Help yourself. Can you do it for me? I don't know how to pump up my tires. I'm like,
wow.
Wow. But it's funny too. Like more times than not, it's somebody that's borrowing a bike from somebody. Mm-hmm. This is the first time they've ridden it. It is just dilapidated. And they're like, oh, do you think this is enough air pressure? And it's like a road bike tire. It's like a 23 or something like that that should have like 100 PSI. And it's got like maybe 15. I'm like, yeah, you need some air in that. And, you know, sure enough, it started this whole parade of like, all right, we're going to pump up all these people's tires. And I thought I was going to get off scot-free. And the next thing I know, I was pumping up 7, 8, 9 tires for people. So
I think it's interesting. So we talk about this a lot, like triathlon being more inviting for some reason than like road biking. Because like, no, you would never like have the same situation at a road race. Mm-hmm. People know, like, bring a pump and pump your tires. And
Matt, will you help me with something?
We want to do a clinic.
I want to make a YouTube video that's funny for triathletes, teaching them how to pump up their tires. That way I can send it up to Chris and she can send it out to everybody and we'll have a good time with it. That could be fun.
I have a funny story on that.
Go for it.
Many, many years ago, a girlfriend of mine had she rode a bike to back and forth to work. And it was in the days when you had a pump that spring-loaded onto your frame, a frame pump.
Yeah.
And so she got a flat tire and she didn't know how to pump it up. And somebody was messing with her and said, the first thing you need to do is blow air into the pump. So she would take the pump and blow it until the handle popped out. And they said, then you're ready to pump up the bike tire.
So just rinse, repeat, and do that 100 times.
She did that for months. Until one morning, she was doing it in front of the local bike shop, and people were wondering what going you do.
That is hilarious. I love
that's
that.
Great. That's mean. Yeah. That's mean.
It is mean.
But we could make a mean video about triathletes.
It doesn't need to be mean. It could be fun.
Hilarious. It could be a little bit mean.
No, I love all of them. They're all good people. And what's nice is you're able to help them out. They're able to go ride their bike and race. And while I'm doing that, I'm like, okay, this is how this works. This is a press to valve. You unscrew the thing, put on it and pump it up. And, you know, this kind of tire, this much air pressure, yada, yada, yada. So, like, you try and teach, but it's just inevitable that, you know, a lot of newbies are going to show up. And, yes, not everybody's born with this knowledge.
And that's the thing I always try to remind myself.
Educate. Like, so let's educate them. Let's make a fun video and educate them. It'll be a good time.
Those are the same people that are not going to watch any sort of educational video about cycling or bikes or whatever.
If we send this over to Y Racing and say, we made a little video for you to send out before all of your races. Here's how to pump up your tires.
Here are the rules. You are allowed to ask to borrow a pump. You are not allowed to ask someone to pump
up
your
tires. I'm surprised that GCN haven't done that yet. I mean, they made videos about how to change gear and how to clip into your pedals and how to do all these basic stuff.
But there's a reason. There's a reason.
What's that, Matt?
It's as basic as the basic gets.
Yeah.
There's no video on like how to wake up in the morning because people just do that too.
I mean, I can kind of get it. Your nose. Yeah. You know, a press to valve is maybe a little bit like different. Like if you don't understand how it works at first, you're like, how do I make this work? You know,
if you fiddle with it.
Yeah.
You'll get it. For less than a minute, you'll figure it out.
Yeah. So anyway,
Our poor listeners for this poor podcast.
It is funny, too, when I'm at these events and I'm at a triathlon, a lot of people that listen to the podcast or are on our team or whatnot, they'll come by, how many bike or tires have you pumped up today, Jake? I'm like, too many. It's just one of those things. And they always get a chuckle when they walk up and they're hanging out and somebody walks up and asks them, like, oh, the pump's right over there. And they're like, wait for it. And, oh, could you help me with that? Yep.
Yeah.
So, good times.
That's interesting. It's interesting. How do you make a video or something helpful where people will actually watch
it. Just parody the whole process of like how they got to that position in the first place. And then
I'm really curious to that part.
Like, show all the ways that they can do it wrong and then finish up.
I know how to ride a bike. There is this bike over here. I'll just bring it to the race and we'll figure out how to pump up the tire.
I just love it too when I'm doing like a full general tune-up on bikes before, because there's no way that bike's going to be roadworthy or usable. That happens all the time. Good times. All right, I think that's it. We're over. We will be back next week with another one of these, and until then, bye for now. Me.
sweat on his brow, intoxicated on caffeine. He's a rolling and he don't care. This bloody British accent is cursing your name. He rides through the streets of Rio and gets us the name. He's the man, he's the king of the geezers. His calves are ripped, his veins are protruding air. Every race he enters, his rivals are always chasing. He splits like a beast. Cycling coach extraordinaire. He's who you need if you want to slay. Chaos on the road, he's a cyclist supreme. He'll battle through anything. I'm fulfilling the cycle.